You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who? A fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet. While you still have a choice.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are here and we have a new guest with us. Well, he's not a new guest. He's a guest who's been on before and he's a huge Doctor Who fan. He was on when we discussed his Doctor Who, a feminist show now. And let's welcome, of course, to the show, the man, the myth, the legend who has just come from Atlanta Comic Con. We are talking to Dan Kozu. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
No problem. And you have decided to talk about The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit, The Tenth Doctor.
Yes, one of my favorites.
What about this, other than, you know, we reviewed all the other stories that you had suggested already? You know, that, you know, what about this one, you know, made you say, let's do this one, Mike?
You know, it's really one of my favorites for so many different reasons. I think it's one of the first Tennant Rose stories where they're kind of gelling as a couple, as a doctor and companion. It's later on in the second season, like eighth episode, I think. And I think their genuine affection for one another is really comes through in this episode. But there's also just something about this episode about being on a planet that is next to a black hole where they're digging into the center where Satan ends up living. That seems like an Iron Maiden album or something. Like, it's just such an interesting, fun concept. And then it also introduces the Ooze, which is one of my favorite kind of Doctor Who creatures. And I think they introduce it in such a good way. It's not, they're not even a main character. They're kind of an ancillary character to the plot, but they become a favorite character of a lot of Whovians that I know.
Yep. Some of our favorite tentacle villains. It's awesome. But they're not even really villains. They're just characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's great to have you up here. And speaking of other people up here, we have our regulars with us. Let's say hey to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
And Ms. Mary Ogle.
Hi, everybody. It is great to be here.
We have a good show ahead of us. And folks, I've been promising for so long that we are going to have a new email address. And you know what? We definitely do have one, finally. We are finally at, ready for this, kids? We are at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com.
Ooh.
So, yay, it's not that difficult to remember. And, you know, please write us. We'd love to hear from you guys. Big shout out real quick to our patrons and everybody at home for listening to this. Thank you. Thank you. We couldn't do this without you. So, as we like to say, there is no Doctor Who news. What do you expect? It is the doldrums of summer, you know, and it's kind of disappointing, too, if you think about it, because this time last year, we were all gearing up for San Diego, and it was actually Jodie's first public appearance for Doctor Who. And, you know, we're all excited and everything. And this year, I don't even know if Doctor Who is going to have a presence there at all, you know, at Hall H or wherever, and because there's no new Doctor Who to show yet. There's, the show is at least 6 months away. Oh. And so, you know, and that's maybe even just the holiday special if they decide to do one this year. And there's no confirmation on that yet even. So we are looking, you know, at least, you know, 6 months or longer with Doctor Who. So no San Diego to talk about, no new season to talk about. So we're going to just talk about watching the paint dry. Either that or we'll just review Trial of a Time Lord.
No.
No, I can't even do that. I can't even do that with a straight face.
Can't even joke about it.
There's lots of rumors going around. There's lots of speculative stuff, but we don't talk about that here. And so, you know, the cool thing is, for anyone going to Dragon Con, David Tennant's going to be there. Freema is going to be there. And so is our favorite Donna is going to be there too.
Yay.
Hooray!
So we got some great Doctor Who guests coming to Dragon Con this year. So I think that's the closest to Doctor Who news that we have. You know, but, you know, because we just don't go into rumors. We don't do any of that here. It's just not worth our time. And, you know, when we do talk about it, or we, you know, go through that, or we, you know, listen to certain people, you know, hey, I have from my source that blah, blah, blah is going to be doing blah, blah, blah. And then it doesn't happen, or it happens a different way. Who has egg on their face? I've got egg on my face. So, you know,
well, if we bring it up, it probably is not going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, the only confirmation that we even had for Doctor Who is, you know, that it's coming back and the Jadoon are on it, at least for an episode. I think that is it. So, yeah. Wow. Lissai. So, instead, we are going to talk about this wonderful two-parter. Let us go and talk all about the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit.
Don't turn around.
Then,
one look and you will die. I'm reaching out to you. I'm so close. Don't turn around. Oh, I can touch you.
Go beyond the reach of the TARDIS's knowledge. Not a good move.
People, look at that, real people.
That's us. The beast and his armies shall rise from the pit.
Whatever it is down there, it's not a natural phenomenon.
He is awake.
Stop it, you can't be!
It's actually pretty cool that, you know, this is one I've actually wanted to talk about. And it's weird because I have not gone back and watched this since it first aired. And so it's been going, God, this appeared June 2006. Wow. And so you're looking at 13 years ago, folks, already.
Oh, man, I'm old.
I know. We have listeners who are as old as this episode, so... That's pretty amazing. And, you know, the Satan Pit and, you know, the Impossible Planets, the Doctor and Rose. But, you know, and like Dan said earlier, you know, this is literally right in the middle of their romp through space together. It was awesome. But this also brought up for the first time that she was going to die in this storyline.
Was it really?
Yes.
I mean, was it referenced? I actually didn't catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the beast tells her that she's going to die in battle.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep. And, you know, she hears it a few more times because this is like a couple of episodes before, you know, the whole Doomsday and Army of Ghosts, because we still have Chloe Weber to go also after this one. And the Doctor lighting the torch at the Olympics.
Let's not even go there.
No, we're not.
Not when there's a good episode to talk about.
Yes. But this was a great, great story. And I like how you, at the beginning of this episode, Dan, how you actually describe it. It was a great way to say, you know, this, you know, the Doctor and Rose come to this planet that's not supposed to exist at all because it should have been sucked into the black hole. And the Doctor has to figure out why. And so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, one thing I loved was how casual they were about it when they first get there. They kind of land and they're joking and they're like, this shouldn't exist, but they're so calm about it because they have the TARDIS, they have their safety net, and then it's gone. And then immediately the tone of the episode shifts. And that's one of my favorite parts is how just casual they are about this, the impossible planet, until like their lives are actually in danger. And I think this is kind of the most fun that they had at the beginning, traveling through space. Like she's kind of getting used to it now, and they can go to like this, these places that shouldn't exist and have fun, but then something can change and it's no longer fun. And I love that tonal shift that happens after the first like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm, exactly, because it carries over from the episode before this, which was The Idiot's Lantern, and when they were traveling through time and space, and she was like so nonchalant about it. It was her and her boyfriend traveling through space. Nothing bad was going to happen, and then they lose the TARDIS, which is pretty awesome. And you're right, and it took... You know, the whole thing, and we're going to mix, go through different parts. We're not going to just talk about the first part and then the second part. We're just going to combine them into one.
Yeah, well, they actually are pretty, they work well together mm-hmm. as a two-parter.
Exactly. I mean,
they're pretty seamless. They're good about foreshadowing things in the first part that happen in the second part. I mean, it's very well written, and it's one of the you know, sometimes two-parters, you'll get one episode that's good out of the two-parters, but for me, these both really, really work well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's interesting that, you know, they have, you know, the humans working on it, but this is the first time we see the Ood, who are basically all slaves to the humans. Yeah, it is
not, the Ood are not being treated well at all.
Oh, no, not at right. all.
No, the Ood are so interesting. I mean, when we first see them, because they're introduced, like, even in the stinger, in the first, like, little bit before, I think even before the music starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they just look like something out of a Lovecraft book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they are not, in my mind, they are not pleasant to look at all.
Right.
So it's one of those times, though, where Doctor Who likes to do that, where they take something that looks menacing and they kind of flip it. So it's against their expectations, where you find out, oh, they're not really that menacing, and then they become menacing, but they're not really, you know, but it's not their fault. So it's kind of interesting that we mentioned this one episode, because we had just talked about, you know, the Doctor's wife, where the Doctor was kind of still regretting the fact that he couldn't save the Ood from this story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because I think this is the first time he encounters them. And even though they are pretty much just referred to as, like, pretty much, I think they even call them like cattle.
Yeah.
That the Doctor really still feels bad about leaving them all behind.
Oh, very much so. And this is, you know, they're basically mindless automatrons almost that will just do whatever they're told. And, you know, they're the workforce, they're the grunts. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, basically they're, you know, when you see the eyes change color, it's like, oh, this is not going to be good. It's like,
it's not a black and white episode. I mean, I like that there are nobody's like all good or all bad. Like the humans are not, they're not saints. They're using the Ood and not thinking very much yeah. about how they're being treated.
Yeah, otherwise they seem like a nice crew. You know, they're out there for the right reasons. They're not there out there to, you know, for military purposes, although certainly they're what they find out could be applied for military use. But they seem like a good bunch of overall, but and well cast too. Oh, really,
yes,
well cast.
Yes.
But in this, it's kind of like, it's one of those stories where you're like, oh yeah, they're really good people, except they're kind of racist.
Right.
Yeah, they're really great people, except they have slaves.
Except they're not.
Exactly. And, you know, you actually feel really bad for Toby, who is the one who gets possessed by the beast. And because he seems like he's the innocent, and he falls target to the beast. And man, it's scary when you first see him with all the marks all over him.
This is not only well written by Matt Jones, but it's really well directed by James Strong. Like, the parts that are supposed to be creepy are really creepy.
Yeah, the production's really good too. I mean, the sets are really good. The costumes are really good. The simplicity of just putting the marks on him is, I mean, they didn't go overboard with making him scary, and yet that made him more scary.
Oh, very much so. It was just like, and it was like you see him and you think, is he fighting against it? Is he, you know, doing, but he's fully possessed the whole time. And, you know, he is, for the villain of the story, it's just like, wow. And, you know, and then he's a good foe for the doctor. Very well, you know, well-rounded and everything. So it was pretty cool. And Tennant, of course, is Tennant's doctor at his best in this one.
Oh, sure.
One of my favorite scenes is when it's just when he's being lowered into the pit, and it's nothing. It's just black. It's just him talking, and does it so well. I mean, he totally keeps your attention. I mean, as you just hear him rambling on, it just says doctor to me. That's what the doctor would do. That's how he would act.
Yeah. And his just empathy, not only towards the Oods, but towards the crew. Like, I can't remember which, there's a character that dies, and he says he apologizes, and it's not even his fault. He just wants to save everyone. And that's what I remember about Tennant's doctor, is just his love of his love of people and his want to save everyone, and that he can't do it. And it breaks my heart sometimes.
I am so, so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pulls one of those for sure. But my favorite doctor moment in this is when he tells Zach, the captain, he's like, I'm going to give you a hug. Don't be startled. I'm just going to come over and give you a hug. Because we've seen other doctors that are like, don't touch me, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly after this, it's a thing where you like, don't hug the doctor. But you forget that Tennant's doctor was all about like, come here, you know, like big hug. I love you people. And it's just, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's like Tennant's doctor is just great. And I love when he comes face to face with the beast. That is that scene. And the CGI of the beast is just amazing in this.
Yeah. They did a great job. Especially for back then. I mean,
back in the old days of 2006. Yeah.
But I mean, technology has moved so far ahead.
Oh, it has. And I'm sure half the heavy metal bands out there were like, oh, why couldn't we do something like that?
It's like my sister and I just got this, our new baby, a big 65-inch TV. we used to have a little one. So we just got this new one, and this is the first Doctor Who episode I had watched on it. And, you know, some things, they don't hold up at that size and with that clarity. But still, the CGI still really worked.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they do a good thing about, you know, they work it so that less is more. You see, like, glimpses until you see, like, the real thing at the end. They just do a great job of sort of that keeping you in suspense for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Not too early of a reveal.
Right.
No, and that was great. They kept it to the end of the second episode. And
yeah, apart from the flashy you get, I think it's in the first episode, right? Where the captain sees him for just a second and you're like, whoa, what's that? Like,
well, exactly. But you end up thinking that Toby is, you know, been possessed by whatever that was. And it just, that was, he was the true villain. And it's truthfully, it's the entity under the planet that's trapped there that's possessed him. And that was, you know, and it gets into all these different, you know, religious stuff. Is that actually Satan? Is that just an alien beast or whatever that the Time Lord's trapped there? You know, it was just pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was an interesting question. I mean, maybe that's how the story started. It's like, what if Satan were real? What if Satan were embodied? What if Satan was an alien?
Well, exactly. And his vestige was just copied through planet to planet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that way, you know, as the great evil to warn people about him.
I didn't think it was the Time Lords that trapped him. I thought he said that it was the Lords of Light, which whatever that means.
Yeah, like
just an ancient race. I don't know who.
Yeah, because the doctor seemed to be oblivious. Like, he didn't know anything about it. And even, you know, several times. And he's pretty open to ideas. But even several times, he's like, it's amazing how many times in this he says that something is impossible. For as usually open and excited as he is for new things, there's a few times where he's like, no, that can't be.
That can't be right.
And I have to give them credit, because even though this is over 10 years old, before we get a glimpse, our first like photographic evidence of a black hole, this CG one, it actually looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And pretty consistent with that.
It does. I mean, it's actually, and it's quite chilling when the body is floating in front of the black hole. I mean, that's a real chilling moment. They all look up and suddenly she's there floating.
Yeah. Scooty.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, yeah. It was your typical base under siege story, too, from old Doctor Who.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which even made it in some ways a little more special. And it was fun to get that old series feel. And, you know, Rose was Rose, but she wasn't, you know, she was...
I will say I really like Rose in this.
See, I didn't. I know.
I
could have done. It's Rose was. She didn't do anything special in this.
What do you mean she didn't do anything special?
No, she didn't. Day by
day. She took command. Like she took. She she kind of helped everyone. Like commander.
It could have been any companion doing that.
But it wasn't.
Out the window at the end.
It wasn't any companion. It was Rose. Yeah. And even the doctor, that's the whole big thing at the end when the doctor says, I believe in her. And
she does.
Look, it's established that they're a thing. So deal with it.
Oh, I do. That's why I comment on it all the time.
And this is, yes, we see hints of it, certainly even as early as when they're in New York, right? Where they just seem to have this banter back and forth. But here it's really like, I mean, it opens with them just giggling like school children, like school children in love.
Yeah, I hate that too.
Thank you, Mary.
Rose annoys the heck out of me this whole season.
I don't know. There's something about Rose that's just, it's something
I
like.
I loved her in the first season. Sorry.
Oh, I did.
No, no, no. I would agree that with Tennant, then that kind of romance. But her character outside of that, it's just there's something wonderfully like blue collar about her that you don't see in the companions that kind of come after her. Like there's a job to get done and she does it, and I don't know. I think with that she grows up on like in that kind of blocky apartment block complex with a single mom, and it's just I don't know. There's just something about her character that seems so different than most of the female characters that kind of were coming out around that time, and even after the companions I don't know. She's one of my favorites. Donna, yeah, I think everybody's here agreeing that Donna's our favorite, but I really do like Rose.
And I like her in this too. Like I said, when she does take command, I think she does so convincingly, and I think that she's definitely in command and definitely saves the day at the end. So,
well, I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you there. I mean, she does have some nice moments. Despite my how much I hate her interaction with the Doctor most of the time this season, she does have some nice moments here, and she does take charge at the end. I mean, I think that's actually a great moment where she grabs the gun, shoots out the window. She just I do agree that she can be a strong character, and I think that's actually why. One of the reasons why I'm more annoyed by it, because I feel like her character was kind of undermined.
Of course, because she was the woman. Of course she was. And I don't mean that meanly. Don't take that wrong. But, you know, they always do that in Doctor Who. They undermine the assistant all the time. And I do think, you know, Rose is strong in this one for what she did at the end, but the rest of it, it's just like she's a typical companion. And I'm sorry to say that. my opinion, but that's okay. So
it's the Rose versus Rose show.
It's the War of the Roses.
Well done. Well done.
I thought it was good. I liked, you know, all the different characters on the station. And, you know, I liked how slowly each one got picked off and everything. And I liked the character of Ida a lot. I thought there was a lot more to her than they were actually, I thought there was going to be even more to her than what they let on. You know, especially with her and the Doctor going down the pit and everything.
Yeah, I was surprised how well they made it that I was so attached to her by the end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Introduced to her. Like, I agree.
Yeah, that's a great moment when she's saved, because you really are pulling for her.
Yeah. And you want to talk about undermine, too, the Doctor undermining somebody. I mean, that at the end when she's like, she's going to go down there, and he's like, well, there's only one thing wrong with that plan. I'm going to go instead of you. And I'm like, but why? Like, you know, and we know it's because he's the Doctor, right? He's the star of the show, so he's going to go down there instead of her. But it's kind of like he was kind of fighting it most of the time. But it was a really interesting way in which they depicted that, too, where, you know, he had that voice in the back of his head saying, go do this. And for the, like, for him, the first time, he doesn't trust that voice. And, you know, was that caused by the Beast? Is that why he was second guessing himself? It's an interesting aspect of this character there.
I also wondered if it had something to do with him being separated from the TARDIS.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, obviously, and also just having seen the Doctor's wife, knowing how much, I mean, we know how much the TARDIS means to him. But certainly the Doctor's wife, even though it takes place after this episode, still the bond is there. And the bond is as close as it is with anybody, as far as as any two beings can be. And so when he does lose his TARDIS, he's not just losing like his vehicle. Like, it's not just a vehicle to him.
No, it's part of his psyche almost.
And This is kind of proof here also that the TARDIS is taking them someplace that they need to be and saving the day, saving the Doctor at the end.
Yeah, how did you feel about, like, that's the one problem I kind of had with this episode, was that he losing the TARDIS was such an important piece of this narrative that he like falls, like runs down a shaft and trips and falls, like, and just kind of finds it. And so but now that it seems like you're kind of proposing maybe the TARDIS found him, which is a very interesting way to look at it.
I certainly think that's, you know, I would offer that explanation and get a no prize for it. I mean, really, I mean, it's nothing that's in this story that confirms that. It is kind of coincidence. It is kind of set up like, oh, you just happened to back up into it. But I mean, certainly that's what I love about, you know, that later episode, The Doctor's Wife, because it kind of allows for that now. So when you watch these things, you can kind of go, okay, that's not as problematic as I might have thought before.
I mean, I kind of had that feeling too, and maybe I was hand waving, but it just it felt like the TARDIS found him.
Yeah,
interesting.
No, it's very interesting to put, because especially after what we talked about last time, it's, and if you look at a lot of episodes of Doctor Who, it happens more than you think it does, truthfully. It, you know, it, and I don't know if it's just by coincidence or that the TARDIS is just, you know, it also does find the Doctor, and it's like, you know, they have each other. It's like, it's her thief, but you know, she stole him also. And it's interesting that way.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the ghost monument that was at the like second episode from the new season or something, where I was actually, when I first saw it, was actually upset with how kind of desperate the Doctor was when the TARDIS didn't appear when she thought it would. And now going, like, thinking about it and looking at this episode of how scared he was when he lost the TARDIS, it is like, I didn't realize what a running theme it was.
I would have hoped this last season of Doctor Who, the newest season, that would have been a theme throughout the whole series, is them trying to find the TARDIS. And the way that Chibnall had made it sound was that's where they wanted to go, that the Doctor was going to be without the TARDIS, instead of, oh, second episode, here it is, enjoy.
I'm still surprised, because Chibnall's strength and Chibnall likes having these long story arcs. I'm still surprised there wasn't more of that in last season.
I fear that he must have been told no.
That's all. I bet he was, because
yeah, that's because I think he originally had plans to, and I think the powers that be were like, no.
Yeah, in other words, fear me, I am the producer. Fear me, I write the checks.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no, Chris.
Yeah.
Because I actually recently was watching the Pertwee episodes where they take his TARDIS away and he has Bessie instead, and he's kind of rebuilding the TARDIS, and he doesn't remember, they take away his knowledge as well of time and space travel. And it is very off-putting to have a Doctor without a TARDIS. But then when he gets it back, which I finally saw, I think it's the three Doctors, I think he gets it back.
Yes.
But anyway, it is like just an amazing moment for him to get it back. So
I would also say too, and you know, I mean, not making excuses for any of the lovey-dovey stuff that, you know, you guys hate, but also in this episode, it really seems like without the TARDIS, the Doctor has nothing and no one except for Rose. So is he going to, I think it makes him cling to her even more.
So it makes him more vulnerable, you think?
Sure.
Okay. That's fair.
That's a valid point.
Good point, actually, Mikey. I didn't even think of it that way, because it was the one constant still in his life other than the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Wow.
Because, I mean, for the first time in a long time, you know, probably since the third Doctor era, he was forced with thinking like, what, I'm stuck in a one place in one time. Damn it. Like, what do I do? You know, and they even have that conversation where she's like, you're going to have to pay a mortgage. And he's like, oh God, no. Like, like, no way. And yeah, the idea of the Doctor having to pay a mortgage is hilarious.
That's when he knew he would stop at nothing to get the TARDIS back.
He almost dived head first down that pit. Got it.
Out of my way, Ida.
That's why he's like, you're not going down there. I am.
He literally is just like, all right, nope, get out of the way, Geronimo. Wow, I didn't think he'd... I thought he would climb down on the rope or the elevator, but no, he just jumped in. Also, this is the first time we get to see that spacesuit that he has, because you see it multiple times later.
The infamous orange spacesuit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As Mary pointed out, the design from the look of the ship to the costumes to... even the outside, you know, they, or in the pit, actually, where they actually, Doctor Who finally goes back to the quarry to shoot some stuff, was just top notch all the way. I mean, that looked like a fun set to be on.
Mm-hmm.
I bet there was just a lot of detail in the ship, especially. They really went all out to make it look good. And I really appreciated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It didn't just look like a factory. sometimes you see these spaceships and they go to like some sort of, you know, broken down factory to shoot the inside. You're like, yeah, that's not really.
No, this actually felt like this was a station of mm-hmm. some kind. Yeah, it was really well done. And you felt, in like how you guys said earlier, a lot of times it felt very claustrophobic. And that's the type of base under siege story you want. And this story for a two-parter, it had the perfect cliffhanger. It had the perfect, you know, pacing. There were no real dead points on this.
No, I don't think so either.
And that's kind of the cool stuff about these stories is, you know, we've had even two-parters in the new series where it could have easily been just one story. This paced perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's very character driven. And I always like that. I mean, I want to care about the characters. And I did. I mean, I felt something when they got picked off. And, you know, you really were rooting for them.
Mm-hmm. You felt it when you saw the one character floating in space. It was just like, oh.
Yeah, it was a horrible moment.
Yes.
It's funny because I didn't realize, I guess it's been a while since I've seen this as well, because that actress who played Scooty is Myanna Burring, who's been in like a ton of stuff since then. Most notably for me anyway, she had a big prominent role in a TV series called Ripper Street, which is done over in Britain as well. She was on Downton Abbey too for a while. She's gone on to do better things. And I would not be surprised if the other folks on this, especially the guy who played Zach, I mean, I thought he was really good as well.
No, definitely. And yep, there were some actors in this. Oh, wait, I remember this person from, like you said, Downton Abbey, or I've remembered these people from other shows, and it's just like, oh, I know that person. And it's just like, okay, that totally makes sense. And oh, I remember seeing this person in this show, and it's just like, okay, that's pretty awesome. You know, it's like, wait a minute, I remember that person from The Mummy Returns, or, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, and that's what also made it more personable in a lot of ways, because you actually felt like you knew these characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I was trying to go with it. It was the long way around, but I made it.
One thing about this episode was actually something that was missing, which watching these older episodes, which I like you haven't watched this one in years, was that the sonic screwdriver was never used. And I'm realizing now how often it's used in the newer seasons, that anything that the doctor doesn't know, the sonic screwdriver now scans it. And I'm like, if this episode were made now, he would have scanned the planet. He would have scanned the computer stuff. And I just realized how it was just kind of sort of used. It was used when it was necessary in these older episodes.
Yeah. In fact, in the first little bit, you know, in the first teaser image or, you know, beginning, when the Ood are coming after them, they're being backed into that corner and the doctor whips out the sonic screwdriver and he's pointing at them and like, what's he gonna do?
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot he did take it out right at the beginning.
It's not going to shoot lasers at them. So what?
I know. I was like, he's going to sonic them to death somehow. Okay.
What are you going to do? Build me a cabinet or something?
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a lot of great stuff out there, and this one, you know, has some really good moments, and I am glad they brought the Ood back after this story, and they're good creatures.
And yeah, they're interesting characters, and I'm glad you actually they're the one characters you don't actually get to know that much about.
No, you don't. You don't actually find out about them until three seasons later. Yeah. So when you had the Planet of the Ood and you find out about the brains and, you know, the whole thing in the containers, and it's just like, so, cause you think those are like just translator devices or something. And, you know, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the use of them as weapons was kind of odd and didn't really work as well for me. But the only other effect that I thought was kind of lacking watching this two-parter was whenever Jefferson tried to shoot them. Like, it just seemed like they were, I mean, the effect of the gun firing just looked a little cheesy.
A little fake, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I got to hand it to him. Like, I would have shot much earlier than he ever did.
I was going to say, that's so British of him to have waited that long.
Even some Americans there.
Like, dude, like, they are almost up in your face. Like, shoot.
No, that's kind of funny because it's like, you know, didn't you ever take here, shoot to, when you see the white of their eyes? Come on. When you see they turn red, shoot. Come on. Everyone knows that. Gosh. Yeah. But yeah, it was a good story. Do we have any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this tonight?
Well, according to the Wikipedia entry, the voice of the Beast was very familiar to us Doctor Who fans. It was played by Gabriel Wolfe, who also played Suteth in Pyramids of Mars.
That is awesome. Oh. That is awesome. But, you know, of course, they used different voice changer and stuff. You know, of course.
Which is interesting because in that period, when he meets Suteth, he says, like, you know, the fourth Doctor says that Suteth has been known by many aliases, including Satan. So.
There you go. Huh. Maybe it's a tie-in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Circle.
Always does. Always does.
Could it be Satan?
Okay, before we go to church lady tonight, all right, let's go ahead and rate this 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Dan, this was your story. You get a pick first.
I'm going to say 4.5 TARDISes.
That's good. That's really good. That is very cool. I like that. All right, Mr. Mike.
Yeah, 4.5, 4.5. I'm trying to think of a reason not to give it a 5. And I think overall,
I can think of one blonde reason.
I know you can. But I, you know what? I can't really come up. It just, there's maybe just a little bit of something special that's missing. Like, there's a reason probably that I haven't watched this one over and over and over again. It's just because as good as it is, it's not integral maybe, or as something that I can connect to as much. So, but I think it's as solid as anything else. And it's one of those ones where, you know, we talked about it before, but if somebody was new to Who, I would have no problem giving them this two-parter to watch. And I'm sure it would be easily accessible for them.
Fair enough. Totally fair. Mary.
I'm going to give it a 4.5 also. I mean, it's just, there are two really fun episodes to watch. They're very well written, and they're beautiful. I mean, you can just sit there and stare at how well the sets are done, the costumes are done, the really good acting, the way the CGI. It's it's one, definitely two of my favorite stories from that season. and I'm glad we had a chance to see it again.
No, very true. I agree with that. All right, my turn. I'm going to give this one a solid 4. And no, I'm not pulling it down because of Rose. Trust me. I promise I'm not. I enjoyed the stories. I thought they were fascinating. There was just something about it, you know, it knowing what comes next in the next couple of episodes also pulls it down a little bit, because you have a couple filler stories after this one. And it's just a lot of, you know, this is towards the end of, you know, Rose and Doctor. And this is, you know, planting seeds for the rest of the season. And Tennant's amazing. I would give him a 5, but just some of the story just didn't deserve higher for me, but I enjoyed it. It's enjoyable. I would recommend it for people. I wouldn't recommend this as a first episode of Doctor Who to watch, because you'd have trouble figuring out what the characters and such, but I liked it. And I think 4 is a good solid number for this. So, ha ha ha.
There.
That's my story, and I'm going to stick with it. I did enjoy it. We want to hear from you guys at home. Please write it at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. Definitely would love to hear from you guys. All right. We are going to be back in a couple weeks, and we are going to be talking about Warriors of the Deep, the 5th Doctor story featuring both the Silurians and the Sea Devils.
Ooh.
So talk about base under siege stories. You got it here, folks. We should just change our name to Earth Stations Under Siege. So it should be a lot of fun. It should be great. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How can people find you? And you get to promote your book right here.
Yeah. You can find me on the social media is K0ZUH instead of KOZUH. And my book is called Lingeria, Book 1 of 1. It's a humorous fantasy tale, and you can find it on Amazon, Lingeria book.
Definitely. We'll have a link to that up on our show notes also. So definitely check it out. We actually picked up one yesterday at Atlanta Comic Con, so definitely take after us. Make this man a bestseller. That's what we need to do. From my mouth to God's, right? Yeah. So it should be. Thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
Thank you again.
And Mr. Mike, thank you so, so much.
As always, it's my pleasure.
And Mary, you made it through.
I did. Oh, this was a fun one to talk about. I'm really glad you picked it, Dan. It's such a good two-parter. I miss good two-parters. Chibnall, hear that?
Yeah. Especially good two-parters. So, Mary, can they find your stuff?
You can find my artwork at maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVision Arts.
Excellent. And that's it for the show. We will see you next time here on Earth Station Who. My name is Mike Faber, and let's bring on the Warriors of the Deep. Peace, and we're done. Ta-da.
Yay.
Awesome.
Hooray.
That was good.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talent from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the comedy stylings of Hugh for the Borg Collection.
When I was part of the Borg Collective, my Borg wife was so fat, when she sat around the collective, She sat around the collective.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.